hard-hitting, intelligent discussion, painstakingly researched, thought-provoking opinions, and deep insight when you need it most. You'll get none of that here. Broadcasting from a secret location deep within America's heartland, Unapologetically Mediocre Studios presents the No Better Than Average podcast with your hosts Jacob Cazell, Jeff Chaney, and Todd Singer.
Welcome to episode 108 of the No Better Than Average show. Let's do some quick housekeeping. We have a comment line you can call into, 317-643-1212. Leave a message. Let us know how we're doing. You can tweet at us on Twitter at No Better Show, Facebook, facebook.com/NoBetterShow. And with that, I'm Todd Singer, and I'm here with my co-host, Jacob. Jacob, how's it going?
I'm doing great. How about you, Todd?
I feel really dumb.
Well, that's not a good thing.
As I alluded to last time, I left a job I'd been at 18 years that I knew a bunch of stuff, not just about my department, but, you know, other departments. And the last 2 days, I've now entered an environment where I'm brand new and I know basically nothing.
Oh, that's the worst feeling. The first couple weeks where you feel like you've made a huge mistake because you don't know everything's not on autopilot yet.
It's kind of surreal. And then I went from not understanding or not knowing how I was going to get everything done to, I'm just kind of sitting in the corner here. If anybody wants to show me some stuff, I'd be happy to do some work.
Guys, don't forget I'm here.
Yeah, it's pretty, I'm looking forward to going to work again. So that's all good. I'm digging the whole downtown thing, even though I haven't gotten out to explore much. But man, now I have a place to park downtown.
Yeah, that's really nice. Yes.
Yeah.
It is. You know, and there's nothing like being the new guy right before the holidays where nobody could give a crap about you. They've got office parties and home parties and holiday plans, and you are so far down on their radar, you might as well just not even come into work.
It's possible that some show notes got updated today, this afternoon. Maybe, just saying.
Maybe just not necessarily on employee
time.
No, not
necessarily, just in case someone from that place would listen, but just possibly.
Yeah.
How are things going with you?
Good. I am actually training this week for my job, which is always a fun thing. So I get to sit in front of the computer for that web-based training in my PJs, yeah. Drinking coffee. You got to love that.
You got to drink a lot of coffee, I would think, to stay awake.
Yes. Now, what's funny is the training class that I just finished a little bit early today, and it's one of those it's a web-based training, so cram as much as you can in because we paid for unlimited fire hose access, so you better just cram it all into your brain noggin. So the class I just finished today, and I put a picture on Facebook. The instructor looks just like the O face guy from the movie Office Space. If anybody gets that reference, I think his name is like Tom Kip or Tim Kip. I looked it up the other day, but it just looks like him, 15 years older, and now he is he's a web-based trainer for enterprise software. So I feel like his life maybe took a turn for the worse somewhere.
Does he like say, now you can ask any questions you want, but don't ask about that?
No, since it's on demand training, so it has been recorded in the past, and there is a mechanism. It's kind of a slick system. You can submit questions, and I guess they go to a pool of people who teach the course who will answer and get back to you, but it's not a real-time thing.
Okay.
The upside is I don't have to wait for the class to come on at a certain time. I can go at my own pace. I can work through the labs, you know, because there's nothing worse than going to training and they're like, okay, here's a lab that is going to take anybody who knows anything about 20 minutes to do, so let's give it an hour and a half, and then you finish in 20 minutes and you just sit there and goof around on Facebook for the other, you know, 60 minutes or so. And with this one, when I get done with it in 20 minutes, I can zip right ahead and pick up the next part. It's great. I love it.
That's good.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting you mentioned that sort of that you know, switching companies and you know, having to start over. Now, I'm curious, from your previous employer to your current employer, was it a radical change in the size of the company, or is it about the same?
It's actually about the same. It's kind of interesting. Almost the same number of employees-ish, and really similar revenue and really similar growth plans and all that. So that hasn't changed too much. But, you know, I thought at my old job, we weren't that good at onboarding people. But we were a little better than this so far. But yeah, like you say, with it being December and such, it may just be a function of all that. And here's more good news. Last year, 2015, we did an office remodel at my old employer. Guess what we're doing in 2017 at my new employer? So we get like 6 people in a temporary office for 4 months.
Yep. Nothing like living through those office remodels. Those are always fun. Yeah. I did the same thing about 5 years ago, and it was a bit of a culture shock. I went from a company of about 50, 60 employees to an organization where just our IT department had 400 some employees. Whew. And, you know, the overall organization has thousands and thousands of employees. And that was a bit of an adjustment, just getting used to the shift in everything, just the culture, the size, the fact that you don't walk down the hallway and say hi to everybody because you know them. And I've been there 5 years and I still only know my little group really and a handful mm-hmm. of other people, and that's about it. And yeah, you kinda miss some of those closer connections.
You're really just a number there. Yeah, the other fun thing for me was apparently at some point it was communicated to the IT group that my name was Paul. So I've got IT people coming around saying, now do you go by Paul or Todd? Like, well, it's Todd. I'm not sure where Paul came from.
That's a really weird one. I mean, that's not even close. I mean, that's not like Jacob Jason, where like, hey, Jason, I'm like, no, it's Jake. I mean, that is, I don't even know how you
do that. Yeah, it's random. I could also mention, by the way, Jeff could join us tonight. We certainly hope to have him back next week, but it's just going to be Jacob and I.
Yep.
And I think I'll go right back going to our listener feedback here. Patron John had a really nice write-up, some of the things that we talked about last show, and he's talking about the obsolescence thing that we referenced. He's got a couple of iPad generation ones, and they're kind of useless, but they're still running, so they're kind of with his kids. And he's saying that the iPad Mini will not support iOS 10. It's stuck at 9. And they may have updates for another year or so, but the screen has some issues. And so he got a new iPad Pro. And that's expensive, but he should have a few years from it. His daughter's got an iPad 2. It still works okay and is updated to iOS 10. And he has a Galaxy Note 10.1 tablet, and he said he purchased it just before they updated the Note 10.1 to a new release, so it's on some ancient version of Android that I wouldn't trust. And I'm going to guess he's probably not even on KitKat on 10.1. It could be KitKat, might be Jelly Bean.
Yeah, it's been around for a while.
Still, and this is now I'm getting away from listener feedback and into some of my feedback, but there's still a lot of devices on Jelly Bean and KitKat. I'll have to do that breakdown time when they release that information. Anyway, then he goes on to say about the tablet. He probably just needs to wipe and get rid of it because it's just really slow. Then he has 2 MacBook Pros, one for him and the missus. He thinks they're 2006, maybe 2008. And they are not supported by the latest Mac OS, Sierra. Though Yosemite seems to be running okay on them. I'm definitely reading now because I don't know any of these Apple words. they're showing their age. He put in 8 gigs of RAM and an SSD, so they're working. But he thinks that the dates are going to stop flowing to them soon. John says, why is he rambling about this? Because the obsolescence frustrates him too. The 2 old iPads work just fine for simple things. His Note 10.1 is useless because everything out today taxes the processor. The touchscreen is unusable. It locks for long periods of time. So in many of these cases, he has to upgrade. And since he works in IT, he worries about exploits and vulnerabilities in the equipment, and I'm sure the software as well. So he feels like he has to be extremely limiting on what it can do And he's actually in healthcare IT. So he says he's painfully aware of what happens when that multi-million dollar Windows XP-based medical machine gets connected to the network without the equivalent of a network condom. Worms, scanners, bots, and ransomware. It costs a lot of money to maintain those old platforms. I get it. You basically have to fork the code base, assign a group of developers to maintain that code base, and patch it as new stuff is found, new exploits, I'm sure. And then the new features get wrapped into the current code base, but can only run on the newer hardware because it wouldn't run efficiently or properly on the older hardware. And then new code APIs come out. Developer isn't going necessarily to write for both libraries, new and old libraries. So now you have more or less two development teams and a significant exposure on the old code base. That's why Windows XP, 2000 Vista, and friends are all pretty much gone. And it's why old iPads, iPhones no longer get updates, or in many cases, not even new applications. And unfortunately, it's why his MacBooks are now in the relegate to the museum ASAP list. Then he also had a quick note about, speaking of obsolescence, I saw an article floating around about Pebble apparently being bought by Fitbit, and Fitbit is going to be reducing the functionality of the Pebble so they can eventually shut down the cloud-based services for supporting the Pebble. All the Pebble features they are interested in, of course, will be rolled out to the Fitbit line, but sucks to be you who may own a Pebble. And I know that now that's, I guess, end of his feedback and now into my commentary, but the Pebble was kind of a Kickstarter thing, wasn't it? And that'd be a shame if the people that, you know, kind of got that started up are without the support now.
Yeah, I know at the time, I want to say Pebble was the highest backed Kickstarter project. I don't know if there have been others since then that have been even bigger, but they raised several million dollars, and it's like the most raised in the shortest amount of time. And I know that Pebble, the company, has actually gone back to the well a time or two and used Kickstarter to kickstart newer versions of the Pebble devices. And they were also one of the companies that was sort of considered a laughingstock, that they were never going to deliver. And I guess the initial Pebble was really late, as like 6 months or a year past when it was initially promised, and everybody thought it was going to fizzle and they were never going to deliver. And then they kind of did. I've never personally used a Pebble, but I know people who are Pebble fans are diehard Pebble fans. So I'm sure there's going to be at least a sizable group of people that are quite angry about that. I don't know that there's really any device out there that does quite what the Pebble does. I mean, I think it has an e-ink screen, so the battery life is really good. It has the health tracking. It has the notifications. It's pretty customizable. So that's probably not so good.
Maybe somebody in the user base will start up another a GoFundMe or a Indiegogo or something, and make a new one that has some of that stuff. I don't know. That is a shame.
Well, I imagine it's almost becoming a commodity type product now, because I mean, you can get like health trackers from China for $15 or $20, and even if you step up to sort of, you know, the big name Fitbit, I think you can get into a Fitbit for under $100, and their flagship devices are $250, and then you step up from there and you're talking, you know, another $100 on top of that for you know, an Apple Watch, or maybe a little bit less for an Android Wear. I feel like there's a definite cap on how much they can get for a device that people are willing to pay, and that number seems to be about $300 or $400, which
I got
is a lot.
Coupon code for Visa checkout, I think, and it was like $20 off a $100 purchase from Newegg. And I found the Asus Zen Watch 2, which is like, you know, last year's model, for $100. And I thought, wow, $100, $20 off, I'm gonna do that. But then fortunately for me, the Visa coupon code didn't work, because, you know, they didn't have any left. It was one of those, like, it's available until it's used up, right? And then it was gone. I'm like, okay, so I did not end up with a smartwatch, but I mean, I was close. But I mean, the point being that, yeah, for $100, you can do a decent smartwatch.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I have an Apple Watch, and I know Jeff is a big fan still of his, and I think that I haven't heard numbers for the re-release that they just did a month or two ago, the Apple Watch, what do they call it, the Series 2. you know, there's no killer app in for me personally, and I've largely gone back to wearing a traditional, just analog watch, and not just an analog watch, but a mechanical watch that actually has, you know, little springs and cogs and mm-hmm. moving parts, because I don't know, to me there's something very intimate about that mechanical clockwork mechanism. You know, the health tracking is nice, but you know, it's not a make or break for me. The notifications are probably the killer app, but I don't necessarily mm-hmm. miss them. I don't know. I don't know if wearables on the wrist are really going to be the thing. I think watches are going away. I think wearables are going away. I mean, I don't know what the thing to step in and have a billion users is.
I think the killer app is going to be payments. Once, if ever, they can get Android Pay and Apple Pay to work really well for your watch, to where, okay, no, I really don't have to dig into my pocket for anything, not a phone, not a wallet. Mm-hmm. I can just hold my watch up and it works every time. That maybe could drive some sales.
You know, I absolutely agree. And the places that I go that work well with Apple Pay, the watch is a magical experience. Unfortunately, the list of the vendors, mm-hmm. the acceptance just isn't that great. I mean, I can go to Walgreens, I can go to Meijer, I guess I can go to McDonald's, but around me, there's not a ton of other vendors that I frequent on a regular basis that accept Apple Pay. And I mean, yep. at one of those locations, the Apple Watch works great. You know, I get comments all the time when I use it. I mean, people are a bit mystified by it, and it's been out for, you know, over a year. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
I don't know. I mean, and going back to, you know, to the discussion of obsolescence, you know, I do wonder if we're just going to accept that that's the way it is, or if people are going to start using things that longer. You know, I have a MacBook from 2012, which, you know, admittedly is a bit long in the tooth for a laptop, and I don't have any plans on replacing it anytime soon. It is supported on all the most current software, but I'm questioning how many more releases of you know, Mac OS it's going to be able to get. And I've done some video editing fairly recently, shooting some video of the Christmas lights and, you know, just putting it together to upload to social media. And, mm-hmm. you know, that is starting to show its age. It's not a machine that is handling 1080p video well when I'm doing, you know, multiple angles and cutting it together and syncing it to music. It's definitely starting to feel a bit long in the tooth, but I mean, I don't really, other than that, nothing else I do taxes it. I don't have any plans to replace it until it's just not being supported anymore by the vendors, which I think is going to happen sooner than the hardware is going to dictate, just because Apple's going to want to drop support for it.
Yeah, if people fork out money for the hardware, they're going to use it. As of last week, there were still 130,000 Note 7s in the U.S. that were active. And, you know, Samsung is working with the carriers to finally kill those off. But, mm-hmm. you know, people are just, hey, I bought this thing. I like it. I'm going to use it. And if it works, then it's probably going to get turned on and put to use in some ways. I don't know.
Just don't squeeze it too hard or it might catch on fire.
Yeah, exactly.
So as long as you're gentle with it. And
hey, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, to your point, I found a page on Android's developer website that sort of mm-hmm. does a breakout of different versions. And, you know, it surprises me how fast the adoption. I mean, I know it used to be skewed a lot more, but so it looks like a little over 33% of devices are running some flavor of Lollipop and 26% are running some flavor of Marshmallow, and only about 12 or 13% are still running some flavor of Jelly Bean. So it looks like Google has done a good job of getting adoption rates up. I know that a few years ago, those numbers would have been skewed a lot more towards the older releases. I mean, they've got some of the really old ones like Ice Cream Sandwich and Jelly Bean down, Gingerbread down, you know, under 2% now, which that's pretty good.
Yeah, if you have a tablet especially, it's never going to get updated. Like even a, you know, I had a pretty high-end Dell tablet, and it's going to be on Lollipop forever until it stops working. So, mm-hmm. you know, as long as those devices can log into the Play Store, you'll have that. There's, I forget which one, but there's one of them like 0.1%. It's been at 0.1% for a year. It's just not dropping off. But remember, that's like, I don't know what, a billion devices or something. So it's still a lot of, like, you know, actual numbers of devices.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you know, the point is that when updates stop coming out and the code base is out there and it's open, you know, you start to get smart people who find exploits to it. And then when there's no support anymore from your developer, what do you do for that? I mean, at least at the enterprise level, a big giant company can go to a Microsoft and can say, we're going to pay you $50 million a year. We want one-off patches for these legacy systems. I mean, there's nobody that's going to go to Google and say, we're going to pay $50 million a year. We want security updates for Froyo. I mean, that's just not going to happen.
True, true. Okay, well, another patron tweeted in about the Apple AirPods. So what did you find out about those, Jacob?
So Apple announced this week, and we are recording this the 13th of December, that AirPods are now available to order from the company's online store. They are $159 as promised, and apparently they are only a month and change late. Originally, Apple said they were going to debut in late October, and they have been kicking the can down the road, and in typical Apple fashion, not talking at all about why they are kicking the can down the road. I know that there was a lot of rumors about supply constraint on the iPhone 7, and all Apple really commented on was the fact that it was supply demand limitations, not consumer demand limitations, which meant that something in their supply chain could not keep up with the demand. They have not really said anything about the AirPods, which, unless it is just a fact that they could not get something manufactured, possibly this new chip that they've talked about developing, possibly batteries. I mean, who knows? It's pure speculation. Apple has not commented at all. You know, you've got to wonder why they are so delayed, especially since Tim Cook is constantly lauded as being the supply chain guru and, you know, the man who can make everything just in time work. Apparently, there was a official press release that mentioned that the AirPods are going to begin arriving at Apple retail stores, authorized resellers, and select carriers beginning sometime next week, and shipments will begin in quote limited quantities at launch. Apple encourages customers to continue checking online stores for updates and availability and shipping estimates. Right now they are saying estimated deliveries will begin on December 21st. So apparently if you ordered in the tiny little window between when they launched the product, made it available, and that they actually had supplies, you might get it before Christmas. I went and checked today at the Apple store, their online Apple store, and shipping time had already pushed to 4 weeks. So looking at potential delivery by mid-January. So I have yet to pull the trigger, despite saying that I will pull the trigger, because I'm an instant gratification guy. And if I'm going to put $160 out there, I kind of want it in like 2 or 3 days.
Understood. That's a decent price point for something like that.
It is.
I just hope it you know, works, because I always worry when stuff comes out right before Christmas, you know, did they rush it?
Right.
Was it not quite finished? And they said, you know, marketing said you have to ship it or whatever before Christmas. I just wonder. Of course, Apple, you know, they wouldn't necessarily have to do that. They could probably say, well, we've got a little bit of cash reserves if we don't get all those sales in. But there's still always pressure to get there before the holiday.
You know, it's nice to have $200 billion in cash. you know, and I'm also taking a bit of a tact that you know, shame on me for buying first generation. I should know better. You know, I bought the first generation Apple Watch, and it was great, but you know, the second generation came out, and it was all of the things that the first generation should have been. It was fully waterproof. It had the better battery. It had the GPS, and you know, that's not a new thing. I mean, everybody always says you never buy first generation Apple stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I bought the first generation iPhone, and it was great, except then when the 3G came out, it was everything that the first generation should have been. And you know, $160, that's not nothing. I would hate to spend it, and then in 8 months something amazing comes out. And as you mentioned, you know, having just gone through a remodel and are going to go through another remodel, my company is doing the same. And somewhere our upper echelon management, who can do no wrong, has decided that open concept is the only way that we can possibly be efficient little IT drones. And so they are tearing out all walls and dividers and everything cubicle, and they are putting 400 some of us on a big giant floor with nary a partition. And so now I'm wondering if I should save my money and buy a pair of nice noise canceling Bose headphones, because the rumors are that you know, it's going to be loud and noisy. And I've been into office spaces like this before, and they are loud and noisy. So what do you do to make sure that people can't overhear each other? Well, you pump noise generators in, which is basically just static in the background, and that doesn't do anything good for you. So yeah, I may have to skip the AirPods altogether and jump right to higher end noise cancelers. So I'm not quite sure what I'm going to do yet.
My former employer went open concept, and it, yes, first we had nothing, and then we had the white noise, quote unquote, which was like really loud.
Yep.
And then they kind of tuned it down a little bit, and it was weird stuff like, hey, in the phone booth, you know, we had these little single phone booths so you could go in and make a call.
Right.
And why is there white noise in the phone booth? Aren't I supposed to be hearing the person? It was just odd. And then I had to make the joke the one day that the fire alarm went off. You know, we were doing a drill, and I said, oh, no, this isn't a drill. This is just a new level noise of the white noise. But
yeah.
And by the way, let's explicitly say, whenever a company says that we're going open concept to whatever, they're lying. The only reason that they're going to open concept is so they can fit more people in the same amount of space. It's just simply an ROI play.
You know, and I would be okay if the powers that be just came right out and said that. And
exactly.
Said, look, we've got X amount of floor space. We have Y amount of people. We have to figure out how to stack everybody in. And
Z amount are not going to be here every day.
Right.
That's true.
And they don't. Instead, they talk about how it's going to encourage you know, participation, team communication, and collaboration. And all it's going to do is make everybody hunker down with headphones on and not interact with any. I literally don't know one person out there who is excited about open concept office unless you are the guy who is paying the bill for the rent. Listeners, if you are out there in an open concept office that you love, I would love to hear from you, because we have 400 people telling our management they're insane, and the management is literally sticking their fingers in their ear going, la, 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 we can't hear you, la, 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 la. And they are spending a bazillion dollars on this, and it's just going to be awful. Now, surprisingly, I know that from some colleagues who have gone open concept in their companies, you know, usually once you achieve a certain level of management, you are spared from the unwashed sea of bodies, and you get your own private office area. And I will say this, at least our powers that be are forcing everyone to eat the dog food. Not one person from the sea level on down is actually getting a private office. They are forcing everyone into a cubicle with no walls, and then a smattering of, quote, focus rooms to let you go in and have small casual conversations in private. So I will give them that.
The same way with my former employer, nobody had an office. So that was something.
You know, but I mean, at some level, like your CIO probably needs to have private conversations more than me.
And that's kind of what I thought.
Probably should have an office. But no, to be fair, he's not taking an office either. Now, he has, you know, two windows and a partition that sort of give him a faux office. But good on him. He doesn't have a door. He can no longer stay away from the unwashed. but yeah, it's not something that anybody's looking forward to. So, yep, the high-quality noise canceling may be in my future more than the AirPods.
Don't they have that too, though? Or is that version 2 will have it, is what you're saying?
Probably version 2. No one knows for sure. The articles I've read said that they could have it. Actually, I think it's maybe JVC or JBL. There is one company, I guess, that makes a pair of lightning headphones that has active noise canceling. that plugs into an iPhone. But, you know, really from everything I've read, and I've done a little bit of homework because I know we're going this direction, the smart money apparently says nobody does active noise canceling better than Bose. They are the best of the breed, and that, I guess, is part of the reason that they're so stinking expensive.
Expensive, I know.
Yeah, because you're doubling that $159 price.
Exactly.
At least. But I guess they have it down pat, and for just that constant, like, noise, white noise, rumble type background, they cut them out better than anybody. So we shall see. Next, sometime next year, I may be raving on what I love about my Bose headphones. I don't know yet. You know, I saw a story that I wish Jeff was here today to talk about, because it kind of gave me a chuckle. The ethical part of me would not allow me to do this, but the the unethical part of me would love to be in this position. But apparently, disgruntled VW diesel owners are stripping down their cars before turning them in. Part of VW's almost $15 billion Dieselgate settlement requires the company to offer buybacks to nearly a half a million owners whose cars cheated emissions tests. And that settlement does not stipulate that those bought back cars have to be in good shape. So some owners are stripping their vehicles down. According to the buyback terms specified in the EPA's consent decree, the only requirement related to vehicle condition is that the car has to be, quote, operable. And I love this because that word has been defined by courts, and the courts have defined operable to mean a vehicle so described can be driven under its own 2.0-liter TDI engine power. A vehicle is not operable if it has a branded title of, quote, assembled, dismantled, flood, junk, rebuilt, reconstructed, or salvaged as of September 18th, 2015, and was acquired by a person or entity from a junkyard or salvaged after September 18th of 2015. Now, this was an article I saw on Jalopnik, and as they pointed out, operable under this definition can mean a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Jalopnik called Volkswagen's settlement hotline, and we're told by representatives that, yes, that is the legal definition under the buyback program of operable. So basically, it seems like you can strip every part off of your Volkswagen TDI and still get your buyback money as long as the car can still drive under its own power. And apparently, there are threads all over the internet, Reddit, the TDI Owners Club, about this specifically. And, you know, like everything, the internet can be an amazing resource. It can be a horrible resource. People are ravaging about the ethics of it. Other people are saying that they have stripped parts off of their cars and still gotten their buyback amounts. There was one in particular, I didn't happen to write his Reddit name down, who had mentioned that he had been rear-ended, so the whole back end of the car, and there was a picture of it, was all crumpled up, had a friend who needed a front end, so stripped off the front assembly, the bumper, the radiator. I think the radiator was there, but took off the bumper and a whole bunch on the front and stripped out all sorts of parts on the inside and said, yes, I got my check, and Volkswagen took it back. So, I'm curious. I really want to know, and maybe we can find out from Jeff for the next episode. Is he planning on stripping his car to the bone? And could this be a good thing if you have maybe an older TDI Volkswagen that's not part of the recall? On a potential flood of cheap parts coming onto the market from less scrupulous people who are going to strip theirs down and just have a garage full of TDI parts now. I don't know.
I'm sure it would cost me more to pay the person to strip it down than I would get for the parts. So I would have bought a Volkswagen, they would be safe with me.
Yeah, I'm sure that probably the majority of people aren't going to go this route. But I feel like there are people that are going to take this as a middle finger opportunity to VW.
Right.
And then there's always some people that just want to see the world burn who hear operable means that it drives under its own power and think, I wonder if I could sawzall the body off and literally just have a chassis, a steering wheel, and an engine. And could I get my buyout money for that?
It's like the car that Michael Keaton's driving in Gung Ho, right? Where
absolutely,
everything just kind of falls off in the parking lot.
I want to see George Wendt in the trunk. That's really what I want. We had another story sent in by Kai, which I thought was an interesting story, and I've actually seen some other things that sort of allude to this over the past few weeks. But the headline was Mac users switching to Surface more than ever before after the new MacBook Pro quote disappointment. I know that you are a devout Windows user, and don't use the Macs, but. So apparently, after the big Apple announcement, 5 weeks ago, there have been a lot of people who've been really unhappy about the lack of the legacy I/O ports. Apparently, there have been some graphic card issues, battery life concerns on the new MacBook Pros. And Microsoft has said that this is leading more Mac users than ever to switch to Surface PCs and laptops. There was a yearly review on the Windows blog, which apparently is an official Microsoft outlet. And the company said that more people are switching to Mac from Mac to Surface than ever before, with Mac customers disappointed by Apple's new MacBook Pro and enticed by Surface innovations. I know that I have seen a boatload of commercials in the last few weeks touting Microsoft Surface and showing, you know, what it can do versus what a Mac can't do. And in the post, Microsoft says that their trade-in program for MacBooks saw its highest numbers ever, where users can get credit for their Mac laptops towards a Surface purchase, partly explained by the fact that they did run a special trade-in promotion with higher values for a limited time. I don't have the number on what that higher promotional value was, so I can only speak to the fact that they were doing that. And the post also attributed growth based on the excitement of new Surface products. Microsoft recently announced a new Surface Book laptop and a Surface Studio touchscreen convertible desktop, trademark, that can switch from an iMac-type form factor to a desk drawing easel. You know, certainly differentiated from Apple's iMac line, and Apple has stayed far away from touch interface on anything except for their mobile and tablet devices, which has definitely had a lot of people kind of scratching their heads. What would be better than a MacBook with a touch interface? You know, that would be awesome. But Apple seems hesitant to cannibalize iPad and iPhone sales and put touch in anything else. So I know Microsoft has branded the 2016 MacBook Pro a disappointment. Obviously, other analysts would say differently. Slice Intelligence, which is a organization we've talked about on this podcast that analyzes online purchasing when people buy things who are Slice customers, it tracks those purchases. So both Slice and Phil Schiller have said that the new Mac laptops have outsold all others in terms of quantities and time. Apparently, within the first 5 days, they set sales records compared to any previous pro-level Apple notebook. But I agree with Jeff in the fact that, you know, when you haven't made an update to the pro level in so long and then you finally make an update, what are people going to do? If you're locked into the Apple ecosystem and you are at the point where you need something, you're not just going to jump ship. You're, of course, going to buy it and you may not be happy with it. So, you know, does that mean Surface Book is a viable path? You know, I think Apple got a big boost about a half dozen years ago from, you know, sort of hardcore nerds moving that way, saying, hey, this is all Unix underneath this, you know, it's got the slick graphical interface, and then pushing it to less technical people who saw them using it. I mean, is that something that, you know, those people might move back into the Microsoft camp? I mean, should it worry Apple? Is this even a blip on their radar? I know at this point, Apple is, you know, all iPhone all the time and probably doesn't even care about the PC division as such, but, you know,
yeah, how much do you get a lot of platform lock in the laptop market?
I would think a lot less.
Yeah.
I don't
know. You have to like buy apps, quote unquote. I guess, you know, you might have to repurchase some of your programs. I don't know how Microsoft works. Like if you're on their 360 program, does it matter what platform you're on? I really don't know.
You know, I want to say if you're on the Office 360, it does not. But now that I have actually let those words come out of my mouth, someone is probably screaming at their radio. Yeah. You idiot. Of course it does. I mean, you know, in that traditional model, and this is kind of where I'm a little stuck in on iOS. You know, I've bought apps for iOS and I don't necessarily get credit for those if I switch to, you know, the Google Play Store. I would have to make the decision to rebuy, you know, equivalent apps. you know, anymore. Yeah. And I feel like I'm a pretty typical user, higher end, but you know, most of the apps that I run are either open source projects or they're, you know, freely available on both platforms. I mean, you know, perfect example, this podcast is being recorded with Audacity, which is an open source product, completely freely available. It's available on a Mac. It's available on a PC. It'll run on darn near anything. You know, we connect over Skype. You can run Skype on anything. I mean, it's a Microsoft product. My web browser is Chrome. You know, everything I do for the most part is, like I said, open source or cross-platform. I think with Office 360, once you buy the license, you can run it on however many devices you're allowed to run it on. So, you know, you download it for a Mac and you rescind that license and download it on a PC. I know that that is true for the Adobe's Creative Cloud products because I licensed those. I think I talked about it a month or two ago on the What I Love, the what do they call it? The Creative Cloud Photography Bundle. And I get apps on my phone. I get apps on my Mac. I get apps on my PC. And you just install it and run, and it doesn't care. You log into it and it goes, yep, you're authorized and here you go. And here's, you know, I've got Lightroom on all of them. I've got Photoshop on all of them. And it works fine. They make all their products cross-platform. So, you know, for a user like me, I like Apple's workflow and thought process, right. But hey, if it died and I didn't like the offerings that were out tomorrow, I could switch over really without a hiccup. Mm-hmm. I might have to set some things up a little bit differently, but I could get around that. So I don't know. And I mean, you know, the Surface Book looks enticing. I mean, that Microsoft built Surface Book is pretty darn sexy. I haven't looked specifically at this desk easel convertible that they're talking about, but I don't hate that idea.
Yep.
I don't know.
There's certainly, I know they've promoted the heck out of the Surface, because when I first got onto the CBS Access app, you know, for the cord cutting, they only had a limited run of commercials, and like every other one was a Microsoft Surface. So it would be just like watching a program on the air, except, you know, all the same normal commercial break spots, except every single break you would get the Microsoft Surface commercial.
Right.
So I'm pretty familiar with a lot of the features, even though I've never looked into one.
Well, I mean, it's running, I think, pretty much a full version of Windows that then has the optimizations for the pen tablet interface on it, so that it can convert back and forth. You know, I mean, they've got the Intel i5, i7 processors. You've got, you know, I think they're known for their battery life. I mean, I want to say 10 plus hours. You know what? I'm actually looking on Microsoft's Surface Book page, and they're claiming up to 16 hours battery life, which I think that might even beat some of Apple's offerings. You know, they've got the pen interface, which, you know, if you want that.
Yeah, the drawing stuff was really neat if you were an artist. I'm not, so, but if you were, I could see that being a big selling point.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, I will say this, from a pricing standpoint, it's still pretty spendy. I mean, it's a premium product.
Yep.
If you want the Core i5 with 8 gigabytes of RAM and 128 gigabytes of SSD storage, and I don't know how that compares spec and price-wise off the top of my head to a MacBook Pro, it's $1,500. Yeah. And then it goes up from there. I mean, the top of the line, which is a Core i7 with 16 gigs of RAM and a terabyte. I'm assuming that is either all SSD or one of the Fusion SSD / spinning hard drives. I mean, that's $3,300, which that's pretty spicy.
Sure is.
But, you know, I mean, you're going to be all in on a high-end MacBook Pro for at least north of $2,000. So if you've already committed to spending $2,000, I think you'd be foolish not to give a hard look at the Surface Book, or maybe the HP Envy, which is they're billing as an ultrabook, and possibly weighing, you know, where's the best place to go.
I have an HP Envy, but it's you know, it's for 2011, so it's a regular laptop. It's a gaming laptop, but yeah.
Well, and you know, I mean, that's probably part of it. And I know we've talked about you've talked about the fact that you're sort of in the market for a new gaming laptop. But I mean, from 2011, I mean, that's 5 years ago. That's ancient in, you know, technology terms.
It's a good thing I play an old game.
Yeah, you might not be playing the most current game, and I don't even know what the most current, like, taxing game is. I know that the running joke used to be how it would play, what was it, Crysis. But, yeah. You know, I mean, for just most 90% of day-to-day use. I think almost anything works. It comes down to what you enjoy. And I don't know. I mean, I think at this point, it's the high-end market is Apple's to lose. And I don't know if they're even concerned about it, which if they're not, then why should we be?
Right. Yeah. You have to figure they bought the, well, I don't know. I don't know how their market segment breaks down, but I would think they're selling a heck of a lot more iPhones than they are, MacBooks or laptops.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like the iPhone division itself is, you know, probably 70% of their overall revenue. I mean, everything else is probably a rounding error on a balance sheet to them almost. I mean, they don't really have a server anymore. The Mac Pro is a joke. Nobody's buying Mac Pros. The laptop line and the iMac line, people still buy those, but again, it's probably less than 10%, definitely less than 15% of the market share. So I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, if my laptop were to go belly up tomorrow, you asked me 3 or 4 years ago, I would have been like, of course I'm going to buy another, Apple product. But now I can't even say that they'd be at the top of my list. I take a long, hard look at what's out there and, potentially reconsider. And I feel like there's a lot of people like me who are technical and who are sort of the more cutting edge user who are going to do the same thing. And then, when people come to me and say, hey, what should I buy? You're going to influence them.
That's true. Yeah. All right. Well, hey, I've got a story about a science story and some Android stuff.
Cool.
What you want to talk about tonight?
Well, let's talk about some science.
Okay. I've had this out there for a while, so it's a little old, but it's called Inspired by Nature, or at least the article. The article is titled Inspired by Nature, and it's the thrilling new science that could transform medicine. And even better, one of the lead scientists, Jeffrey Karp, drew inspiration from a Spider-Man illustration in a journal article.
Nice.
He basically saw it as a colleague was reading it in the break room and wondered what it was about, and he kind of got the idea of possible breakthrough. The article detailed how a group of researchers had created a new synthetic material by mimicking the properties of gecko feet. Yes, those insurance salesmen whose tiny hair-like pillars allow the lizard to stick to and detach from apparently sheer surfaces with ease. Karp wanted to create a new type of medical tape. He played around with a design based on the tiny pillars and the gecko feet. One of his current projects, so he went on to something else, is inspired by porcupine quills, small surgical staples that will be less damaging to the surrounding tissue than current staples.
Huh.
And there's a surgical glue that has entered human trials in Paris. The glue was inspired by actually sandcastle worms, which live in California coastal waters. And the reason that it's exciting is it was glue that had to set up quickly and maintain its effectiveness even when being deluged with blood.
Okay.
And they had some success tested in rats and a dog, and it did well in an initial human trial, but there were only 36 subjects. And they kind of went through how, the different iterations of, okay, this substance will hold, but it doesn't set up quickly, or the blood, will rush into it. And when the dog test was basically someone who brought his dog to the vet and had a problem with his jaw, and the vet knew of this thing that they were testing, and so, a chance to get a trial. And now they can set that glue. They put it in the body and they can heat it up in like 15 seconds.
Wow.
And it's set and it holds up to that blood rushing around it.
Huh.
A different engineer, which I'm going to mispronounce, I'm sure, Yaiji Nakatsu, was tasked with designing to mitigate vibrations caused by high-speed trains entering tunnels, probably in Japan. Yes. People as far away as 400 meters, I have no idea how far that is, could be inches, could be miles, were complaining about the bad vibrations. And this in particular was a bird watcher, and he thought of the kingfisher, which uses a long and flat beak to dive from the air water with minimal disruption, so it doesn't alert its prey.
And so he changed the design on the front of the plane, and it reduced vibrations by 30%.
Huh. Well, that's interesting. And 400 meters, that's what, about a quarter of a mile, right? So it'd be like 1,200 feet, something like that?
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, and obviously, you know, Japan has some very dense population areas.
Sure.
That was affecting a lot of people. They're calling this new inspiration. It's still in its infancy. Adrian Thomas of Oxford University says the obvious mistake is to copy nature. It's possible to do much better than nature by exploiting the best engineering materials. But it's also, you know, a way to start to think of kind of ideas, maybe paths to explore. And there's a lab at Harvard University is working on other projects, such as self-organizing swarm of tiny rats. Can be used for tasks such as surveillance, traffic monitoring, and crop pollination, and a mattress that senses the cardiorespiratory functions of infants that can help detect when they are having trouble breathing. So obviously to combat SIDS, and all that stuff sounds both terrifying and hopeful.
Wow. You know, and that's interesting because, you know, like some of those are a little icky. I mean, surveillance, you go, oh, do I want swarms of robots that can surveil me? But it seems like we're doing a good job of crashing bee populations, so crop pollination could be like a real issue in the future.
Yes.
And, you know, clearly if you could detect and catch an infant not breathing, I mean, that could be
a
huge thing.
Yeah, because there's still no, as far as I know, no for sure reasons or known causes of why SIDS actually happens. No root causes yet.
Yeah, they have some
theories, but
yeah. That's really cool stuff.
Just science taking some ideas from nature, and everybody feels good when that happens, right? When you get the combine both the natural and the technological with people adding to it.
Yep. Very cool. Well, you know, I know we've been going for close to an hour, and I got to say, I am solidly blaming my internet connection, but it is, you're breaking up a lot. So I'm sure at this point, our listeners are probably frustrated. So I am going to vote. And I guess there's only two of us. It's not really a vote. I'm going to make a motion that we hold the Android stuff to next week. We talk about what we love and wrap it up so that hopefully people aren't throwing rocks at their radio right now.
I second the motion.
Okay. So
that's too bad. It sounds really clear in my head. So, you know.
I think it is my fault. My internet has been acting all wonky today, and I don't know what's going on. I need to call the cable company and probably reboot some stuff. I'm solidly blaming my end.
I messed up too. Jeff usually does a second recording. I didn't even think about that.
Oh,
yeah. Rookie mistake.
So talk about what you love, Todd.
What I love is Google Wallpapers. This is an app that they basically launched with the Pixel or right before Pixel phone, and it's daily changes to your wallpaper. Several choices are available, your photos, on-device wallpapers that you've downloaded, but the real standouts are the ones that come right from Google: Earth, landscapes, cityscapes, life, and textures. And I'll just pick a different picture and change your wallpaper every day. I'm using Earth. And kind of similar to the one that you told about or told the you know, on the show on the browser, it's kind of the same thing for the wallpaper. And if I want to see the origin of the photo, I can just go to the app and it'll see where that picture was taken.
Oh, that's nice. I miss that. I miss being able to have utilities change the background or have them change over time. I wish that the iPhone had something like that. It's such a little thing, Apple. Give it to us, really.
Yeah, it's simple, but it's really kind of neat. That's what I love this week.
Nice. Well, you know, what I love, and I tried to be cryptic putting it in the notes so it wouldn't give it away. I was actually talking with my lovely wife. So before everybody out there thinks I am a total misogynist, this is her idea. But as I was contemplating what should I talk about that I love, she was giving me ideas, and she said, you know what? You should love your wife. And I said, well, of course I love you, honey. She said, no, you don't understand. You haven't had to buy, or come to think of it, even wrap any presents for probably the last 2 years. And so what I love is a gift-wrapping wife. And I highly recommend that you upgrade to the gift buying and wrapping wife model. it is expensive up front, and there are a lot of ongoing costs. But darn, if it isn't handy at the holidays. I really haven't had to think about the holidays much. Packages show up with smiles on the boxes and then magically appear under the tree. And it is great. So I highly recommend that you get yourself one of those. And ladies, I mean, you know, turnabout is fair play. You get yourself a gift wrapping husband. That is absolutely fine too. But I will just put it out there. I am a terrible gift giver. Like I enjoy giving gifts to people, but I am terrible at like knowing what to get for people. And I don't know what it is mm-hmm. about me, because like I try as a person to remember when it's someone's birthday, to, you know, tell them happy birthday, to remember those kind of things. But as far as like, oh, this thing would be perfect for so-and-so, I am awful. I'm awful at that. And I'm so lucky to have someone in my life who is good at that and can do it for me. So the holidays have been very low stress this year, and I have my wife to thank for that. So that is what I love.
Yeah, that was really thinking by you.
Yeah, it was. It cost thousands of dollars, like I said, up front, and then thousands of dollars on an ongoing basis. But to not have to worry about the holidays, man, that is priceless. That is a MasterCard commercial right there, if I've ever heard one. All right, so I think we have come to the end. I want to thank our patrons, Dennis, Jamie, Jeffrey, Jimmy, John, and Kai. Thank you so much. We appreciate the stories that you guys send in, and the thoughts and the rants and the raves. If you, anybody out there would like to support the show, become a patron, or heck, just to contribute, that is always awesome. We appreciate that. And you can do that at patreon.com/nobettershow. If you have a question, a comment, a rant, you can give us a call on our call-in line. That number is, as always, 317-643-1212. We will listen to it and put it on an upcoming episode, unless you tell us not to, and we will respect that. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can do that at No Better Show. You can visit our blog at www.nobettershow.com. Always, you can send us an email, feedback@nobettershow.com. We read them all. If yours is interesting, we'll put it on the air. And again, we love the feedback. We love the stories that you guys share and the comments and thoughts. If you like the show, we would appreciate it if you would tell your podcast listening friends, tell your non-podcast listening friends, maybe tell your podcast listening enemies about us. And if you subscribe, rate, and leave a review on iTunes, we would really appreciate it. It helps us keep growing the show. A handful of stars really goes a long way towards helping us out. You have just listened to the No Better Than Average podcast, so hopefully now you know better than average too. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great week, everybody.
I'll catch you later, everyone.